Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Mark Mishik, 26 years of combination experience, a captain on Truck 2 with Wichita Fire Department. Mark was a mechanic in the automotive industry and told himself he just doesn't see a future in this field. He had a friend tell him about a volunteer opportunity in the fire service within the county he lived. Once Mark joined, he formed relationships and friendships with individuals within the fire service who were truly into being the best version of themselves. When Mark decided to go full-time career mode, Wichita gave him his chance, and once he got on, his career speaks for itself. I truly hope the listeners tune and hone in on the truth Mark speaks. One of my favorite quotes from Mark is, "If you're not going to be the guy to pull back the reins, don't be in leadership." With that, I present Mark Mishik.
All right. Well, I'm Mark Mishak. I'm a captain with Wichita Fire Department. I've been with Wichita Fire Department for the last almost 20 years, be 20 years this June. And then for 6.5 years prior to that, I was a volunteer reserve in the Wichita Sedgwick County area back when there was a fire reserve program. I actually got into the fire service. I was a mechanic by trade out of high school and kind of was sick of turning wrenches, figured out pretty quickly that, you know, doing brake jobs on a 94 Ford Taurus isn't the same as putting a big block in a Camaro or a Chevelle. So I found the work I had prior to that been really committed to not really rewarding. Kind of had an interest in law enforcement, went started going to school in criminal justice, and within a semester kind of had the epiphany that, you know, personally, I've never been a huge fan of cops. My respect for them is much higher now than it was then, but with my way I drove cars in high school, I had a lot of interactions. I wasn't a huge fan. So anyways, a guy I grew up with, who lived next door to me, who's now a captain on the Sedgwick County Fire Department around Wichita. He was a volunteer reserve. He's like, "Hey, you should check this out and see what it's like." And so, November 3rd, 1998 was the first night that I volunteered. It was after we had a large flood here in the city of Wichita. So my first night, I threw on a t-shirt, grabbed some gear, jumped on a truck, and we were filling sandbags, doing flooding control, and just very quickly just was like, "Oh, wow, this is super cool." And the more I got into it, the more I fell in love with it. And honestly, it's kind of funny, the difference as I was as an individual back then, if I had known how much work it would have been and how long it would have taken me to do it, I never would have done it. Just in that stage in life, I wouldn't have had the motivation to follow through with it. But volunteering kept me passionate enough and kept me engaged enough that's what led to me getting on the fire department eventually. And so with Wichita, I spent about 8 years in downtown Wichita. Most of that time spent as a driver OV of Truck 1. Got promoted, spent 4 years on the south side as a lieutenant, and went into our training division, spent a little over 2 years there as a captain doing operational training program development, and then came back out onto the floor, worked in Northeast Wichita for 4 years. Then I'm now back the captain on Southside Wichita, and I've been there since November of last year.
Okay. So I'm going to go back a little bit. When after you know, you did your stint or your tour that night, filling the sandbags, mm-hmm. and you're like, "Hey, this is something I want to do." Was Wichita your first and only choice, or did you kind of go out and fill out applications around you?
I actually looked around a lot. When I first got into it, it was kind of a weird season. I obviously was most familiar with Wichita and Sedgwick County Fire Department. So initially, those were the two applications I put in. I actually, it's funny, I put an application in Southeast Kansas in a little town of Pittsburgh. Went and tested there. And then the follow-up day when they did a follow-up interview was the same day that my test for Wichita was. So I was like, "Well, I'm not going to give it the chance to work in Wichita." And it turned out everybody that went to that follow-up got offered a job. So, you know, the good Lord worked in my life and I got applied in Wichita. Well, when I got on the hiring list, we used to take lists every 2 years. That was when they started the drop program in our retirement system. So Wichita went from averaging about 23 hires a year to dropping down to somewhere in the neighborhood of six or eight hires a year. Because once that drop program started, many members that were coming up on retirement stayed extra time so they could drop a few years. So anyways, that's what led to me. I sat on that list for 2 years, barely missed a class. The next list, I was actually living in Lawrence, Kansas at the time, working for, shame on me, an ambulance company out of Topeka called AMR. And so it's amazing what you'll do for a woman, because my wife lived up there at the time. So anyways, so I didn't get on that next hiring list. It actually was towards the end of that list is when Wichita and Sedgwick County transitioned to more of the CPAP model of hiring. And they cleaned that list out. It didn't live 2 years. It lived over 3 years. They hired pretty much every eligible candidate off of it. Just the time it took for them to get all the logistics in place to transition to the CPAP model. So at any rate, just the way that things worked out, that's what kind of why I wound up volunteering as long as I did. But I looked all over the country. I looked in the KC metro area, Oklahoma, you know. And by the time it kind of all came around, the last time I applied and actually got hired, by that point, I'd been dating my wife for many years. She grew up in this city. I grew up in this city. And so at that point, we had enough of roots set. And I had been around the Wichita Fire Department for so long that I had a lot of friends and mentors here. So by that point, this was where I wanted to work. But when I first got into it, I didn't know any better. And so I really explored and looked around all over the country to see, because again, when you first get into this and the idea of it, you don't really grasp the intricacies of the fire service and how each organization is different. And heck, I've even told people before, I joined our Fools chapter as a volunteer. If I had gotten hired that first list when I had the first opportunity, I really have no idea where my career would have been. Because I would have gotten hired in. The culture of the organization was very different then. If I would have gotten assigned to a particular officer and they set the tone for what it meant to be a good firefighter, whether that tone is right or wrong, that's probably who I would have been. And it was only because I volunteered, I wound up making connections with some good mentors on the work and within the Wichita Fire Department and through the Fools chapter. So by the time I got hired, I had already had exposure to what a good fireman was, and had some guidance and leadership there from others. That then, once I got onto the department, I kind of knew the type of firefighter I wanted to be. But you know, that's kind of the pitfalls of recruit training. You have to train recruits to be amenable to whatever company officer they get assigned with, right? You don't want to, you know, and nozzles back in the day was a huge debate here. You don't want to teach a recruit to be, oh my gosh, full on smoothbore. And then he happens to get assigned to the captain that is a diehard fog nozzle guy, and suddenly he can't work. He's failing, not for any other reason than the way he's instructed. So, in the course of trying to teach them to be good at their job while equally being amenable to different leadership styles and belief systems, there was a lot of gap there. That's kind of been changed here in Wichita, but back in the day, that's how it was. So, you know, again, I was really fortunate in the long term that it worked out the way it did, because I really have no idea what my career would have looked like had I not had that time of volunteering. And there's a whole nother side of that. You know, if you've ever volunteered, have you ever been a volunteer firefighter?
I started as one.
Okay. So I think most guys that have volleyed will kind of relate to this. You know, when I was a driver at Truck One, I would wash the rig every night after dinner by myself. And this was my therapy, right? Because as you get into the organization, you get frustrated with, you know, politics or budgets or union stuff, whatever it is, right? And you have a tendency to forget that there was a season that you washed that fire truck for free. And in my case, the reserve program operated out of the reserve fleet for the larger departments. So I mean, I rode on the first pumper I drove in the 1990s was a 1965 Seagrave that was refurbed in the 80s. And so I was washing lime green fire trucks, right, for free that had rust holes in them. And now I get to work in the downtown firehouse riding a newer Pierce and getting paid to do it. And so there's an appreciation to not only getting to serve, but getting to do it as a career. You know, you think about how many of these conferences, and maybe you did the same thing. I would turn wrenches and work on cars and try to log extra flag hours so I had enough money to go to FDIC or Fire Rescue International or really any conference I could go to. And I had to figure out how to get time off to do it. And I remember the first time I went to a conference after I was on the job walking around, and me and a buddy that we were reserves together, Jason Kerfoot, he's one of our recruit instructors now, joking about, can you believe we're getting paid to do this? This is our career now. You know, this is what we do. And so at any rate, there's a lot that comes through, I think, guys that have volunteered. I think there's an appreciation for the job and appreciation for how good things are when you get to do this for a living, because so many firefighters don't get that opportunity. And you know, they still operate at the tip of the spear, but they then have to go make a living and they have to go home and raise a family and everything else. And so, again, in my case, those years of volunteering, the opportunities to get more appreciation for serving and be able to connect with some great mentors prior to me getting on the fire department was profound in what changed in my career. So.
Okay. With you having that volunteer time and having those connections, those mentors, when you, I'm assuming when you got hired at Wichita, you had to do some sort of recruit academy, correct?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. So once you completed that aspect and you got your first assignment, did you, well, I kind of want to ask, was it a good assignment? Because if it was, did you already know, okay, this is the person I need to go to, or these are the guys I need to go to in order to enhance my skills to be, become even better.
No, my first assignment sucked. And it was actually kind of comical because I remember telling people by the time I got hired, I only applied for Wichita Fire Department because I knew I wanted to work here. And some people have the philosophy of, well, I'll apply at several places and I'll get this and I'll work there for a while and then I'll move to another organization, the one I really want. And then there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. My personality type is not that way. I had figured out by that season of my life that I was going to make a home wherever I went. And so I only applied for Wichita. The other reason I applied for Wichita, and it's no slam on the county fire department or the more rural agencies, but my biggest fear, county fires relocated some of their firehouses. But back in the day, they used to have one way west of Wichita. And I mean, literally, it was like in the middle of nowhere. There's fields all around it. You'd walk out the front slab and you're in front of a cornfield. And you know, I used to almost be calm. I was like, you probably wouldn't even have to run hot out there because there's no traffic. So I didn't want to work in an organization like that. We felt so far removed. Well, then sure enough, I'd get out of recruit academy. I get assigned to Firehouse 13 up in North Wichita. And in front of that, at that time, was, you guessed it, a cornfield. So it was at the time the slowest firehouse or one of the slowest in the city. We would average turning out the door once every two shifts. I went an entire pay period without leaving the building. So as a rookie firefighter, I got excited if we had to go to maintenance, you know, just because we got to get on the big fire truck today and go drive around.
Right.
So my first assignment was not good. And that's where having those mentors and those friends in the Fools organization were really helpful. It gave me a place to still be passionate about the work we're doing, even though the firehouse I'm at isn't doing it, and still get some good training and talk about it and that sort of thing. And equally for us, that was the other appeal to the Fools organization for me was, you know, there were no ranks, there were no unions, there weren't any politics. You know, it's tradition, training, and brotherhood in the fire service. That's it. And so, where, you know, on my duty days, you would have, you know, Captain Newby or Captain Turner or, you know, Lieutenant Ross. At the a fool's meeting, it was, you know, Sid and John and Kelly. So people that on my duty days that were, you know, as a rookie, unapproachable, and I had to certain keep my distance and make sure to address them in a certain regard in a fool's meeting, I could sit down with a drink and just talk shop with them. And so that's why that was a huge appeal to me. And I encourage any firefighters, wherever you're at, if you're not happy because of the fire duty you have or the a crew you're working with or the firehouse you're currently assigned at, that connecting with peers and mentors is absolutely critical, because we can't control what emergencies we get. We can't
Right.
control how many runs we get, but I think guys underestimate how much control they have in their personal joy in the job and even what their firehouse looks at like. I mentioned when I came back out on the floor out of training, I got assigned in Northeast Wichita, and it's a steady firehouse. I think the engine runs 2,800, 2,900 runs a year. The truck turned out a little over 2,000 times a year, so it was steady. It wasn't dead, but 75% of the runs were systems alarms. I mean, no joke, systems alarms. It's a new area. If you've heard of the Koch brothers, a lot of people associate them with Wichita. I protected one of their homes, and I protected one of the son's homes. So very affluent area. When I walked into that station, the station logo was a spider in a spider web, because the station is located on Webb Road. And the joke is, once you get assigned there, you're stuck like a spider in a spider web. And so it's like, I can't roll with this, man. I can't. I mean, I get the assignment is not the most ideal, but we can't. I can't have that be my station logo. No matter where I work, I want to be able to take pride in it, because I still work for Wichita Fire Department.
Right.
When I left that firehouse, there's rig boards on the front of the building. The station has a logo that pays homage to the first fighter jet ace in the world. That is got an airport right next to it that's named after him. There are tool racks in that firehouse. The members changed all the lights in the apparatus bay to red. Silly little simple things. You go into the day room and there's rig photos from the inception of that firehouse opening to current day. You go to the back of truck five and there is a keep back 200 feet sign from the rig that was originally Aerial 5 before Firehouse 18 even started, but that happened to be the rig that got assigned to 18s when it opened. And so that isn't me. I got to be a part of it, but a group of members recognize that we still get to do the best job in the world. It doesn't matter where we're doing it. So we're going to try to take some pride in it. And I mean, this firehouse, even though it's a newer building, it's like condemned. There's cracks in the walls from the foundation settling. They have to rebuild it. I mean, it's a crappy place, but the members took pride in it. The members recognized the value and how grateful they were for the opportunity to still ride a fire apparatus and occasionally go to fires. And they changed the entire culture and dynamic of that place. And I think if you ask any Wichita fireman that has on the job now, and you ask them about 18s, they'll tell you, yeah, that's a shitty assignment. But if you ask them if they've been in the place lately, they'll tell you, yeah, it looks totally different. Nothing changed about the alarm load. Nothing changed about the area. The only thing that changed was the attitudes of the members assigned there. And the fact of the matter was, the crew I had there, love those guys. Great guys to work with. And they did a great job on the fire ground when we made them. They did a great job the rest of the time. They held themselves to a high professional standard. Now, no disrespect, this is another thing in the fire service thing. Sometimes it gets lost in translation. This is coming from a guy who spent a lot of time in some of the busiest firehouses we have. If you're not playing in championship games, my opinion, you can't expect yourself to perform at a championship level. You can compensate. You can train hard. You can try to make sure you are staying up on your skills. But no matter what, it's always going to be exponentially harder, in my opinion, for somebody to be a good fireman in a slower company or slower department. And in fact, if somebody's experienced both, I think they'd agree. Because you have to be very intentional about staying good at your job when you're not making those runs. I mean, no offense. Where I work now, we get regular fire duty. If I screw up on the fire ground, okay, well, I'll get it next time, next day, or later today. I'll have a mulligan. I'll be able to make it up. You go to a slow firehouse or a slow department, it may be 6 months, a year before that opportunity comes back. And equally, you can train the skills to get the repetition to where you're comfortable in the skill set, but I'm sorry, you just can't. I have not found a way to duplicate the stress, the adrenaline, and everything else happens when that alarm dumps and you see a header a half mile away and your second new companies are, many minutes out, right? that is something, that is an emotion that you only get really comfortable with when you're using or going through it a lot. So, and that's again my opinion. So, I don't want to say that firefighters that work at slower departments are less for firemen. In fact, I think they're more. I think they're better because they have to be very intentional. Where I work now, if we do a mayday drill, I mean, I fell into a floor 3 months ago and burned the heel of my boot on the backside of my foot. So, mayday drills are something that happen when you regularly go to fires. But if you're not turned out a lot, you get a lot of distance from the idea that that's even possible. So the discipline it takes to stay engaged and passionate in those places is very challenging. It's very real. And that, again, that's where having good friend groups and peers in your organization and outside of it is just so critical to helping keeping yourself passionate and not getting discouraged, not getting jaded. But it ultimately, how your daily life in the firehouse is perceived really is in the hands of you and again the members you work with. It's a little bit easier when you're the company officer and you're like, hey guys, we're going to mount these rig boards in the firehouse today, right? It's a little harder when you're the firefighter, but we do have more control over it than we probably a lot of times realize. And in my opinion, Wichita Fire Department is the best example of that. You look at, if people are familiar with Wichita Fire Department, you see how we operate today. You would not believe the contrast of that to this fire department 20 years ago. It's completely different.
I was actually going to be one of my questions, so I'm gonna go ahead and ask it. Has Wichita always been busy with fire duty like you are currently back then, or has that been something that has changed and evolved over time?
Wichita is kind of an anomaly. It has always been consistent with fire duty. Now, there's been obviously, like anywhere else, there's swings, but it has always consistently stayed busy, which is strange because while we have economically depressed parts of town, we aren't an economically depressed city. Honestly, Wichita, in a lot of ways, is like a really big small town. Most of the city is in pretty nice shape. We have a lot of areas that are really, really nice and affluent. It's got a low cost of living, and so it's not like we're Detroit or something. We don't have a lot of what you would attribute to justify the regular duty we have. With that said, operationally, the department is completely different. So when I hired on, it was all level one staging a block away. Only the first new companies could respond in. Our trucks weren't even staffed. We did not do truck work. We were a pre-connect crosslay inch and three quarter only fire department. We had inch and three quarter high rise packs. We had no 2.5 inch hose. We did, like I said, the aerial devices. The only difference between them and an engine was they had to stage two blocks away, not a block away. So it was a completely different department. Our rescues that you see now is Rescue 1 and 2. They were Hazmat 10 and Rescue 4, and they strictly did their specialty disciplines. Now, Rescue 4 would get sent to commercial building fires, but those companies' primary focus, as far as being special operations, was their special operations. They weren't operationally a fire ground support unit like they are today. So it's a completely different, no smooth bores. Hell, Wichita Fire Department didn't buy Halogen bars till the late 90s, early 2000s. So yeah, no, I mean, it my recruit class was the first recruit class in 2005 that had a fully structured, organized forced entry class. The previous academy in 04 had a smattering of it. My academy had 2 days of forced entry. It was the first one. So when I came out of class, and if you used, I remember a firefighter. He's one of our. He's actually heading the training academy right now, Clint Gifford. When he came out as a rookie, he got assigned to a captain who, if he used the words irons, he would get yelled at. That's not a set of irons. This isn't New York. That's a Halligan bar and a flathead axe. And so, this captain would criticize him for it, not realizing the textbook we were learning out of called him irons. I remember in recruit class, we were standing around and going over equipment, and one of the instructors held up. We used to have these short pike poles with a D handle on them, and he held it up. He's like, "What is this?" And somebody said pike pole, and I said closet hook, and I got ridiculed in front of the whole class. That's not a damn closet hook, blah blah blah. And it's like, the test we took this week was over equipment, and in the book it says a 2 to 4 foot pike pole is called a closet hook. So, being a Fool's member as a new hire was terribly unpopular. If you had a radio strap, it was a Hitler Youth strap. My recruit academy was the first one that got issued classic style helmets. Prior to that, we were a Metro Salad Bowl, is what I call them. No disrespect to guys that wear them. But that's what we had. My academy was the first one that got classic helmets, top mount pumpers, hose beds in the stratosphere, you name it. I mean, completely different organization. But the thing that often guys gets lost in the translation between today and 25 years ago is the guys 25 years ago, they would crawl a hallway. They would crawl the crap out of a hallway. They were good firemen. They just did not have the resources, the equipment, and the techniques, the tactics, and even the empowerment to do their job in the way that our members are today. And I think sometimes any organization that's trying to make change, you're going to fight that. You're going to have senior members that are resistant. And the only encouragement I have is, nozzles as an example. You camp in the smoothbore camp that it's actually absolutely better than a fog nozzle, right? You're going to have a hard time telling that to a 28-year captain who has a career of firsthand life experience putting out fires with fog nozzles. And the fact of the matter is, I can give him all the math, I can talk about reaction forces and everything else. It isn't going to change the fact that he has developed an institutional knowledge through all of his careers with a particular device. And honestly, his entire playbook is based off those experiences. So whether or not there's an advantage to one or the other, there may be. But at the end of the day, typically the techniques and tactics applied using them are typically used both. Most people use a fog nozzle still on a straight stream when they stretch in, right? So as long as you have a fairly close flow, what are we arguing about? I don't really care. Give me something to put me on the end of the pipe. I don't really care what the pipe is. And I think sometimes we hedge up and get really campy with our belief system about what's better or worse. And it's like, it's just different. Everything in this job is different. And there's compromises in every single thing there is. You look at Wichita fire pumpers and our low hose beds and everything else, and there's still compromises on that truck. And I think sometimes we think that only this way is the right way. And if you're trying to institute positive change in your organization, you have to give respect to the fact that even if the guys that came before me were door kickers, they didn't use Halligan bars, has nothing to do with their passion and aggressiveness on the fire ground. We just didn't have the tools that we had. You know what I mean? And so we made a lot of enemies when there was a culture shift starting to begin here in Wichita. And part of it is because rather than approaching things from a more objective way, we used, or a lot of myself and my friends were very critical of people, very critical that if they didn't agree with us, then they were just wrong and disrespected the amount of hallways those guys had crawled before us. And so I encourage any organization, any members that are trying to make positive change in their organization, find grace with your senior men and involve them in those conversations. Ask them questions. Take their counsel. Even if you don't agree with it, take it. Listen, hear them out. Give them the respect they deserve. Because again, I made a joke on our retirees page the other day as we've been starting a health screening cancer initiative that, a lot of the members in that group were crawling hallways before a lot of my current members were even crawling on a floor of any kind. And there's something to that, especially when, like I said, Wichita's consistently had fire duty. So it's just how we operate and how our members are empowered is the difference.
Okay. with how Wichita does business today, was that a hard transition, I guess, in a sense, to get to where you're at, where truck companies are doing truck company functions? Hell, I mean, not too long ago, I love how your organization stepped up and commented on there was a fire going on, and people, the keyboard warriors went crazy, and the official Wichita page was like, no, this is how our members do it. We firmly believe and agree with how it's done. So to get to that point, what was that like?
So it's funny you bring that up. So I lost an uncle in a house fire when I was younger. And that house fire that video got all that play off of, that was a friend of my mom, friend of mine's mother's house. And so I knew the family, or at least I knew Jake. And so I'm watching all this commentary and I'm watching all the keyboard warriors. And I try to stay out of commenting on social media. I have, there's many reasons, whether we're talking about the fire service or just in general. Occasionally I fail. That was one of the mornings I failed. I even called one of my friends, talk me out of this, brother. Don't have me do it. And unfortunately he didn't. And I happened to know, one, I had a video from the Delta side of that fire. So I wasn't going to share the video, but I had video. And it was a completely different look. And I, over last summer, I had a knee surgery. So I spent time in our downtown on our administrative floor. And I got to know I've known our social media coordinator for years. But at any rate, I called her up and was like, look, this is, people are misconstruing this. Da, 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 da. So that's actually how that came about, was the keyboard warriors were really just got under my skin. I'd seen it the night before, it got under my skin. And so, decided to take snapshots of that video, highlight points, explain the process, even just the perspective on that video that they posted. They had to crop it down because we have social media standards about identifying factors that will give, and so the address was cropped out and things like that. And so the video looks totally, I mean, it looks pretty sketchy, honestly. I mean, if you're a fireman and you're aggressive, you're like, oh, that looks awesome. But it looks worse than it is. So on that alone, was why the perspective alone made a difference. But then it was like, no, some of the comments on there were just, again, I couldn't believe it. It's like, if these are firemen, what the hell's wrong with them? I mean, again, I don't know which one of these guys, and there was a lot. I mean, it was overwhelmingly negative. And like I said, I'm like, bro, what if Jake goes on there to see this and happens to read the comments and he sees his fire department getting criticized? I think back to when my uncle passed away, my family, if they, we didn't live in an era of Facebook back then, but if they're opening up Facebook posts and seeing how horrible the fire department operated and the fire my uncle died in, what are they going to think? Are they going to be able to rest at night knowing the very best level best was done by the organization that responded? Or are they going to second guess, And so that really torqued me off. And I didn't mean to get off on a sidebar there, but that's where that grew out of. So I think your question was, how did we get to where we're at operating today versus when I came on? Is
I
that,
mean,
go
like
ahead.
somebody had to, I'm sure whatever group or individual decided to take that on to get Wichita to where it's at today, I'm sure the target was set straight on their backs.
Oh, it was. It absolutely was. And that the thing about it, and again, I think members often, guys, forget how much ownership we have, not just in the culture of our firehouse, whether it's a firehouse or a station. For me, that's a difference. There's a difference between the two. In fact, if I was fire chief of any fire department in the country, the first thing I would do is get rid of the word station. Think about it. What station do you go to that isn't temporary? Gas station, police station. They don't stay in the police station. They're on the streets. Every station is temporary. It's not a station. It's a house. You want ownership of your members. Treat it like a house. Treat it like a firehouse. Back when they were first opened, that's what they were called. So those little things, you control some of that culture. The same thing with the culture of the organization. None of the changes happened with a chief coming in and changing it. It all happened in blue shirts. Now, Most of them were Fools members. In fact, there was a season where guys used to think that Fools members would meet up with the fire chief and sit around and drink brandy and smoke cigars and hijack the culture and operational deployment model of Wichita Fire Department. It wasn't that at all. At the end of the day, if you are into the job and you're attending trainings and you're actively trying to get better and all these different disciplines in the fire service, and we both sit through a promotional assessment, you are going to be able to speak and articulate the things that I'm going to be completely clueless to. And it's nothing to do with where we worked in the department. You have built yourself more in knowledge in the trade that you're working in. So it started with firefighters, lieutenants, and captains who were just passionate about being good firemen, getting better at being good firemen. And again, that's another term. There's a difference, in my opinion, between a firefighter and a fireman. Firemen, I don't use that term, and I've been assigned with multiple female firemen, and they were outstanding firemen, and they've earned that term. It has nothing to do with identity politics. It has to do with the same way that in Boston, if you're a good firefighter, you're a Jake. It's a term of respect and regard. It isn't just something to do with a title. And so, with that being said, as all these individuals in our Fools chapter were getting better at their job, they were starting to try to institute change on a small level. Well, eventually, those firefighters became lieutenants, and those lieutenants became captains, those captains became battalion chiefs. And so, that natural progression over time, eventually the ranks got more and more, for lack of a better way to put it, infiltrated with members that were better trained, more passionate, and that led to small changes. And it starts super small as adding New York roof hooks to your inventory as opposed to wooden pike poles or fiberglass, right? As small as, getting away from, we had Interspeer air packs, getting to Scott air packs, getting away from Metro Sellable helmets, getting to classic helmets. I could go on and on. I have, one of the best Morning Pride gear specs, I believe, in the nation. Chief Ross, who does our spec, is an expert and understands all the facets of it. I have outstanding turnout gear. I have a bailout system. I mean, really, with a Gemtor harness. I mean, I have anything I could want. I mean, all these things came from members making small changes in the firehouse level and slowly progressing through the ranks to where they had more opportunities. Now, we did have a fire chief that worked here before, came back after working on the East Coast. And so he had seen traditional truck engine models. So he was much more open to instituting that. But the program was built by, at the time, Captain Bob Wolf, who retired from here as a battalion chief and wanted a fire chief in the neighboring department. Firefighter, maybe he was a lieutenant then, Scott Kleinschmidt, who's now a battalion chief here. Now Derby Fire Chief John Turner, who was a captain here. Derby's DCO was a lieutenant at the time, Dave Hirsch. Retired now battalion chief Sid Newby was a captain. I can go on and on. I can name drop all day long of all these guys that either are currently or exited the organization in those white shirts. But at the time, they were wearing blue shirts with yellow, black, or orange lids. And so, however, when the blue shirts train and they bring back information and they come up with plans and they come up with policies, the administrative crap nobody wants to do, right? But when they try to basically come up with the answers to every problem that the chief of training says, why we can't buy this, or your operations chief says, we can't operate in this way, when you come at them and you have a well-articulated message, you have well-vetted policies and procedures to actually implement those sort of things. You have training models and plans about how you're going to bring the membership up. You keep coming up with solutions to their problems. It becomes harder and harder for them to say no. And I think at the end of the day, I've never been a chief, so I'm speaking in theory here. But as a captain, if my members want to do something, when I came into my company, the truck two deploys in a way differently than the previous truck companies I'd worked with. Now, we had a conversation. I put some rules in place about how I would like to do business. And I said, you know what, guys, you've been doing things this way. I'm going to be open-minded. We're going to give this a try. We're going to take what you've been doing. We're going to mold it into what I want. We're going to see how it works. But for me, I can't be the leader that says we're going to do it this way because I said so. Most leaders don't want to be that kind of leader. But I can't go to the fire chief and say, hey, I really feel like we should do low hose beds and start carrying static loads and then not have any answers to how would we truly configure it? How would we actually go through the training model to get people trained on static hose loads? How would we adjust this? Where are we going to move this equipment? All of the different facets to it. Because if you've ever worked in the administrative side of a fire service organization, we would like to think the fire chief, the deputy fire chief, their focus is on the stuff we care about. But let's be honest here, that isn't necessarily your fire chief's job. Your fire chief's job is to answer to a city manager or a city council, right? To answer to the citizens you serve and equally answer to the membership that works underneath them. But they serve multiple masters. And sometimes those masters, their own interests in a topic don't mirror each other. And the fire chief's stuck in the middle of it. And so the point being that, again, sometimes we think, oh, if we just had got rid of this battalion chief, it'd be better. And sometimes that's true, right? Sometimes it happens through attrition and patience. But I think that's a big key there is through that natural progression and attrition, and through that season where we had our targets on our back for a long time, all of a sudden there became more guys with targets than there were guys that didn't have them. And slowly but surely, the cultural shifted. And I'll be honest with you, that shift happened sooner than I thought. When you throw years out, it sounds worse than it is. But I mean, by the time I promoted to a lieutenant, I had 8 years about when I got promoted to lieutenant, it already had shifted a lot in the organization. We were already doing truck company operations. Hell, even when we rolled out truck ops, I figured it's going to take 5, 10 years before it's the norm. And yeah, the first year, year and a half, it was still pretty much status quo. We just changed the name on the rig and we rode on different apparatuses. But next thing you know, one guy cuts a hole. And then two guys cut a hole. And then for a while there, we cut holes in crap that, hell, we cut a hole in the top of a mailbox. I mean, it was just like we got a little bit overboard with it, I'll be honest. So it may seem like it's really long because the wheels of government and culture work very slowly. You'll be surprised how all of a sudden one day you have a victory and another victory and another victory. And eventually you get the upside in the game on the scoreboard. And it just now you're trying to actually control the pace of it. You know what I mean? So all of our changes culturally within the organization happened at the operations floor level. And eventually we got chiefs in place. And even the ones we had before that were more open-minded and more willing. And again, when you articulate a well-thought-out plan, you pointed that Facebook post. It was nothing more than explaining what we did, why we do it the way we do it. This is how it's deployed. This is how we train our members. We're not saying every other fire department in the country needs to do it this way. This is the way we have found to be the most effective, right? The safest roof to be on is the one you're not on, right? However, why would I put 9 members underneath a roof that I don't feel comfortable putting 2 members on top of? And you talked about, you looked at that post. How many people quoted NIOSH? Oh, there's no wonder we kill so many firemen every year. If you don't know how many firefighters have died from vertical ventilation in the last decade, you might dig into it a little bit because it's low, very low single digits. And one of those includes a member on the East Coast that was stepping off of a roof onto an aerial device and fell. So, point being that so much of cultural change, so much of how an organization operates comes from how the membership operates and how much they're willing to put into solving those problems while equally doing it in a way that shows respect to the leadership they work for. Like I said, I can't come onto your podcast and say, your podcast is a bunch of crap and here's how we should do it. Why would you listen to me? It'd be about the time to hit stop recording and end the Zoom call, right? Now, but if I come at you and say, hey, brother, I understand you've been doing it this way. However, We've been looking into this, and this might look a little bit better, might work a little better. We have some examples of where it might work a little bit better. These are the things that are required to do it, but I have an idea about how we can kind of address the training to transition problem. And oh, we need to find funding for equipment. Well, we could save a little money if we stop doing this, we start doing that. And you know what I mean?
Right.
And so, again, every person, any, I haven't found this to be wrong yet. Any fire department in this country, I don't care where you work, I don't care how bad it is, every member in your organization at one point in time hired into that organization to be good at their job. Right?
Right.
Nobody hires in, especially departments that have organized academies, and endures that crap and endures a rookie year to be bad. Everybody had the passion to be good and doing what they do. So if there's a disconnect between commitment level, passion, whatever it may be, the question is why? And that's where that we talked a little bit beforehand about what I've spoken to about trying to reconcile some of the things younger in my career. The epiphany moment came when I recognized when I hired on here, I was certain they were going to have to force me out, right? I'm going to do 30, 35 years easy. I'm going to stay until they kick me out. Well, then a few years ago, I started realizing my awareness about how many more days I had until I get 20 and I get survivor benefits in my pension. Now, how does that happen? How does somebody who's so geeked out on the job, spend so much time on my off-duty days being plugged into the fire service, suddenly become somebody who's contemplating retiring? Now, some of that is organizational stuff, but equally some of it also is my own personal things, focusing on, the circle of concern more than the circle of influence. That sort of thing. So anyways, cultural change for us came from operations. It came in small steps. It came from when we really wanted something, being willing to put the work into doing anything that needed to be done to make it happen. I mean, what is there's a quote, and I can't remember the exact, I may bumble it a little bit, but many people want to be part of the solution and not part of the process. But the process is where you determine who is worth having being part of the solution. It's easy for me to throw stones and say, we should do this, we should do that. But if I'm not willing to invest the time and effort into doing it, then maybe I don't really believe it as much as I think. And again, I don't necessarily blame administrations because, like I said, they got a lot of other stuff. I watch my battalion chief every day do, and great fireman, loves what he does. Well respected, Chief Bowen was one of the other members, was instrumental in the growth of our truck program. I watch him do a lot of stupid stuff between Teams meetings and emails and reports and you name it. I assure you that's not where he wants to put his focus, but it's his job and that's what he has to do. Right. So that's where, as a member, if I want to change something, if I do the legwork and I put it together, much more likely that he'll be like, because it may not be that he doesn't want it. It may be he didn't have time or the resources to commit to it. But if I got the time, I'm there for 24, in your case, 48. I put a little bit of that time into doing some training, into doing some development, into trying to bolster my argument on a point. Maybe then we can get somewhere.
Hey, love it. Love it. You mentioned it took you a little bit of time before you decided to promote. So when you finally got to the rank of captain, what did you want leadership? What does leadership look like to you? And when you became a company officer, what kind of leader did you want to be?
So there are kind of two main things that sum up my philosophy, if you will. The two things I try to embody most. One is I'm a firm believer in servant style leadership. As a firefighter, I tried very, very intently to be what my officers needed me to be. And so by working for my officers, then when I became a boss, I wanted to be a boss that worked for my members, right? My guys come in every day, they check out the rigs, they clean the firehouse, they make breakfast, they, clean the toilets. That's what they do, right? They work for me. And in turn, I'm going to try to work for them. I'm going to make sure that what they need, they have. They got a hole in a Nomex. Well, let's get on that. Let's get that fixed right now. The truck's got this issue. Well, let's talk to maintenance and let's get it addressed. You know, we could really use some more paper towels in the firehouse. Well, I'll go talk to the supply lady, see if I can figure something out. Right. So, I try very intently. I don't know how successful I am. You'd have to ask my guys, but I try to be very intentional about working for them and serving them in the capacities that I should, right? Help personally, professionally, whatever it is, pouring into them where I can, helping them get better. At the same time, my job is to hold them accountable. And that's the hard part of being a boss. And I think sometimes, you know, that's what's great about Wichita. We have lieutenants and captains. The lieutenant can be the buddy boss, right? You can still be the buddy. You can hang out. You can have fun with the guys, but you're still a boss. Like when the tones go off, you become a captain. My opinion, you become the boss buddy. Okay. I become the bad news guy. And so I have to limit my interactions with my guys. You know, I don't know if they realize it or not. None of them will probably listen to this, but if they did, I'm intentional about how much I interact. I'm intentional about how much of the joking I play with. I'm intentional about not necessarily being as loose and as fun. That's what my lieutenant's place is. That's their place. And at the end of the day, I still have to be the guy that is in a position that's willing to hold them accountable. That's my job. And the fact of the matter is, you know, one of the things I know you mentioned previously about was you touched on aggressiveness. Well, if the fireman's place is to be hyper aggressive, right? Theoretically, firemen, they're going to push as far as they can push, right? That's they're like a kid, okay? And that's what they should do. They should push the boundaries. When I become a boss, my job is to rein them in, right? And if you, I own horses and race horses. My horse is a thoroughbred, a four-over race horse, and they're actually trained to run into the bit. So anybody that knows just a little bit about horses, you pull back on the reins, it slows them down, right? The race horses are tended to train into the bit. An officer who doesn't recognize that their place is to help that hyper-aggressive firefighter find a little bit of restraint and balance and just pours more aggressiveness on it, you're eventually going to have a racehorse. You're going to have a horse that there is no stop, there is no slow. And the more you pull back the reins, once you realize you lost them, the more you pull, the more they're going to go. And so, point being that I think you have to have a healthy respect for your role. And that's one of the reasons I didn't promote earlier in my career, even though I could have. I wasn't ready to assume that role. I still wanted to be a fireman. The other thing I try to do as a boss is I believe that I can ask you something to do, or I can ask you how to do something or tell you how to do something, but I can't do both. Okay. So I learned this lesson as a lieutenant. My driver at the time was a now retired member, Seth Gooden. Great fireman. And Seth was the mold breaker. He's one of these guys who had a natural talent. When he punched in, he was on the job. The second he punched out of the clock, he was off. Like you couldn't get Seth involved in anything. In fact, Seth's the reason I still have a mustache, but that's a whole nother conversation. But Seth was a consummate professional, outstanding as a job, natural gifted individual when it came to doing work. So, you know, the thing about him was one, he didn't look like what I normally expected or anticipated a firefighter to look like, but he equally was a true master of his craft. But when, and I'm trying to remember my train of thought there with tying it back to leading him, Seth carried the Lincoln bar. That's what it was. So I had many years, most of my years as a firefighter was spent as a driver OV on a truck. ROVs operate independent of the company. I carried a 6-foot hook and a Halligan. That's what I did. The Lincoln bar is a very, very cool tool, but somebody that taught forcible entry for our recruit academies for over 16 years, that was kind of one of the disciplines I was very passionate about. I wasn't a huge Lincoln bar fan. It's just, you know, it's not a super versatile tool in a lot of ways. Well, Seth carried the Lincoln bar. And so I got there and I'm like, well, we actually had policies that said what tools OVs were supposed to carry. I'm like, how am I going to reconcile this? I was like, okay, you know what we'll do? We'll set up some drills. Seth will find that that tool is very limited and maybe he'll make a change. Problem was, Seth didn't. Seth could adequately force inward and outward opening doors with just a Lincoln bar, even outward opening metal doors with just a Lincoln bar. He could attack a drop bar with a Lincoln bar. He could obviously vent windows with a Lincoln bar. So at the end of the day, is he accomplishing what I need? Am I going to sit here and get into a nozzle debate? Am I going to sit here and piss and match and set up camps on one side or the other of a discussion? Or am I going to say, Seth, I need you to force Charlie's side door. I need you to secure utilities. I need you to put a high priority on coordinating horizontal ventilation to support the engine company. And I need you the ability to do a search with the tool if you necessary. If you can accomplish those tasks, I don't really care how you do it. You're not using your foot, right? So at the end of the day, I need to be more focused on the outcome and what my tactical goal is than necessarily how it's done. And I think sometimes as a boss, people get really set in their ways and they dig their heels in on particulars that wind up putting you on the opposite side with your membership. And so I want you think about the amount of training that you put into being a firefighter. You have a do you have a favorite fire ground tool? If you're on search, is there something you always carry?
Typically I'll either carry the can or the Halligan, but I'll tell you, getting used to the can, that was a little cumbersome, but it can be done with the right instruction.
Right. Yeah, it's a challenge, right? So, with that said, your preference is a Halligan, and it may be, I'm a Pro Bar guy. I'm still a Pro Bar guy. The reason I'm a Pro Bar guy is I have a Pro Bar that I've taught forcible entry, not only in my department, but across the country for 19 years with, that's still intact. I've still tuned it. It still works great, right? So, you may be a Council Bar guy, and we can sit here and cuss and discuss all day long about the differences, right? And all that does is puts us on opposite sides. And there's really no reason for it. The tool's a tool. What matters is that you're confident and capable with it. Whether or not you go to an inward opening wood door with forks or adz, it really doesn't matter. As long as you understand the limitations of each approach, you understand the can opener may not always work on a wood door, and you understand how to transition if it doesn't, then why do I care? What do I? You're not using your foot, so I don't have to worry about you blowing your knee out. So I apologize. I got to step for one second.
Yep, you're good.
Sorry, man. Good job, dog. You ruined everything.
It's all good.
You know what I mean? It's a, as a leader, that's what I've always tried to be, is open-minded. When my membership, when my driver chooses to position the rig and shoot the aerial in a way that I wouldn't have, I have to ask myself, was he successful in what he did? Did it cost any additional time in the way he did it? And if he accomplished the task, he accomplished the task. He did what I asked of him, right? Now, equally, there's other stuff out there where you do have to draw a line in the sand and say, I need you to do this particular thing in this particular way. But that should be the minority. It should not be the majority. And so, because again, I've seen it enforced voluntary time and time again, that there is so much to that that has to do with strength, body mechanics, things like that. There are techniques and things that work for folks that vary based off the individual. And to this day, no matter how many times I've forced doors through all the years I instructed, I am still faster with a hook and a Halligan. I mean, bar none, inward or outward, 6 foot hook, New York roof hook, not a Vulcan hook, not a Talon hook, not any of the other 37 different hook styles. The little prying end on the end of the New York roof hook and a Pro Bar, I'm still the fastest. And it's weird. And it's funny to show people techniques like that because, it's very, if you've never done it, I think a lot of people associate hook and Halligan with taking the hook and using it as a striking tool. And the way I learned it is using the hook like a wedge, where you're using that small prying end to get your initial purchase, and then you can hold it with your hip. You just lean into it and it captures your progress. You go to ads and start the can opener and you gain projects, you just move yourself closer to the door. The hook captures. I mean, the whole way. You get a full can opener, then you reposition the hook, capture again, lean in, work again. And it's amazing the transition when you get good at it, how quick it is. And it's exponentially less physically taxing than swinging the 8-pound axe or a pig or something like that. So That's a body mechanics thing, you know? And so I could sit there and harp on my guys and say, you have to carry the pig, you have to carry this, or judge guys that don't. But at the end of the day, there is a lot of things that people have their personal preferences. And as long as they're accomplishing the task I want and not doing it in just an absolutely absurd way that's going to either kill a lot of time or hurt them, why should I care? So I as a leader, those are probably the two biggest things. I hope my guys view me as a sergeant style leader because my job is going to be I have to ask them to do things. Some of those things they're not going to want to do. So I hope they equally feel that I am willing to pour into them and support them and help them. And I learned that honestly, strangely, one of our older captains when I came on, whenever we would do annual hose test, he always rolled the first section. And when we would do Saturday cleanup at Firehouse One, which was like a five bay firehouse, two stories, it sucked. And every once in a while, the captain would come out, push a squeegee. He didn't do it every day, but every once in a while he did. And he did both those things because he recognized the fact that everybody's going to bitch about it. And at the end of the day, if the captain's not bitching, maybe I should ask myself why I am, right? So I hope my guys feel that that I emulate what I say, that I think being a servant style leader is important. And equally, I think it's important to ask, understand that you can ask your members to do something or you can tell them a way to do something, but you should avoid trying to do both. Because again, everybody here works very hard, trains very hard, gets their personal tool preference on a search. There's a reason that you develop that. I have to respect you have a certain amount of knowledge through training or experience that validates your decision there. So either I trust you to be a good fireman or I don't. If there's a training problem, we can work on that. And guess whose job it is to make sure we work on? Me, right?
All right.
So, but by allowing you the latitude to make some decisions about how you're going to do your business, as long as you're getting the business done, again, I'm hoping that that demonstrates and you perceive the respect that's given there. And hopefully, then you reciprocate the same respect to me. When I give you something to do or I'm specific about something, you recognize, you know, he doesn't do this on everything. And equally, he gives me a lot of latitude and a lot of other stuff. Okay, I'll listen, right? Because the days, in my opinion, the old school firehouse of doing it this way because I told you so, I just don't think that flies anymore. Generationally, things are very different. Younger firefighters have so much more access to information than we ever had. And, you know, there's times I've been teaching that, you know, it's like I know that somebody can sit there and Google me as I'm talking and fact check me, no problem. Right. So you have to make sure that when you have certain, you know, absolute laws, there's good reason for them, and you got to try to be very careful about how often you use
No, definitely. Well said. Well said, for sure. I want you to briefly hit on the for them meaning because I've never heard it put that way, but I love it, number one, but I also hear how, you know, talking to other individuals outside, how that term can get misconstrued very easily.
No, so yeah, we talked about it a little bit before. You know, as I got a little bit more time on the job, you know, I was always a for them person, right? And I always emulated that in my career. In fact, I'd like to think I still do. With that said, when I went from being at a firefighter at Firehouse One and a lieutenant at Truck Two on the south side to hell, even going into training, and I'm doing a more a Monday through Friday, more administrative. Granted, it was very much hands-on. But it was, it, you're not, I wasn't jumping on fire trucks more structure fires anymore. Then I come back out on the floor and I'm assigned out of the 18s. And, you know, it was hard. Again, somebody who's traditionally been very, very passionate, involved in the fire service is struggling to stay motivated. I'm like, what the hell's the deal? Well, it hit me that I wasn't necessarily really here for them. I was here for these. I was here for the people that have fires, you know, One's area is downtown. It's very diverse. And, you had high rises. You in parts of Riverside, there's multi-million dollars homes. And then you equally have, crack houses and 2.5 balloons that are cut up into SROs, right? It's a diverse area. Didn't necessarily get as much fire duty as the South Side, but still, when you got fires, they were typically good. They were typically challenging. And twos, and a lot of our South Side company houses, and even most of our core has regular duty. It's easy to be a good fireman there. But when you go to a slower house or you work in a slower department, it's a little bit challenging. And that recognition that I was here for the people that were having fires, I wasn't here for them, the rich people that don't have a lot of structure fires and have a lot of systems alarms, or when they call 911 for a medical, they tend to actually have a medical emergency. And it was tough to reconcile that because I still, at my core, believed I'm here for them, right? And so I had to adjust my perspective and recognize how much harder it is to truly be here for them when you aren't going to fires, when you don't get to work with your buddies, you don't get to work with the most professional people. I had a captain back when I was part of our special operations on the hazmat side that used to always make the joke that, hey guys, this is still government work, right? And so we're government employees, which means it's not like we're hiring necessarily the tip of the spear in the workforce. And granted, the fire service is a little bit unique, but his point is valid. And so I don't have any control who I get assigned with. I don't have any control about how good they are at their job. Maybe there'll be some opportunities that I might be able to bring them up, make them better through training or involving them and stuff, whatever. But I don't have any control over any of that. And I don't have any control over where I get assigned. And so with that said, what I can control is my attitude about it. And I just caution guys that have this hyper, we're here for them, not to criticize Facebook firemen or anything like that, but that's easy to say when you work where you want to work and you work with good people. But and that ties directly into leadership equally. Something that I think gets lost is, as a firefighter, be selfish. You work, do whatever you got to do in your organization to get to the firehouse you want to get experience, get involved in special operations, truck ops, whatever. Be wholly selfish. In our case, like I said, we have lieutenants, which is kind of a middle ground boss. You could still be a little bit selfish, right? You can still push in your career and try to work your way into better companies. As a captain, I'm not saying you are in a position where you shouldn't try to better your firehouse. And again, I'm in that boat. I, after 4 years at 18s, was able to get myself back down south. With that said, I got to recognize the fact that what I signed on to do is go wherever the city tells me, work with whoever the city assigns me, and get the very best version of that person. And at the end of the day, I can't expect every single member to be as good as some of the members I work with now. It's just not going to be that way. My job is to get the best out of them. My job is to, if they're inadequate or lacking, do what I can to fix the problem, not through discipline, through actual instruction and training. So, the point being that being there for them doesn't always mean what we, I think, sometimes think it means or feel like it means, because truly being there for them means a lot of times doing it in places that aren't as much fun, isn't as enjoyable, doesn't get as many fires. And if and it's okay if you recognize, bro, I only want to be fighting fire in 22's area where they have good fire duty and everything else, then that's cool, bro. Do it. Right? But don't be putting I'm here for them on your Facebook page, because you're not. You're here for these. And that's okay, right? Because again, fire department, my organization's very, we have 22 firehouses, lots of places to work. So it's not like there's not a home for everybody. But for me personally, I struggled with that when I had the epiphany of, oh crap, I was here for them. And now that I'm at a different firehouse, I don't want to be here for these. And then at the same time, I'm a captain now. I chose to step up and lead. I chose to be in a position where my members followed me. And I remember when I first got assigned there, the first thing I did is told them, I will not seek a transfer for a minimum of 1 year. Now they can move me wherever they want, but I'm committing to you. I'm going to ask you guys to do some things differently, come along board, cater to some of my expectations. So I'm committing to you. I'm going to give you a year. And the fact of the matter is, none of them would have listened to me if they knew as soon as I got there, I was going to do everything I could to get out of there.
Right.
And why should they? I'm just temping. Why are they going to adjust anything for me? They'll just endure me until they get rid of me, right? So, like I said, that's one of those topics that I think that I think sometimes it's I don't want to say inexperienced or be condescending to any membership in the fire service, but I think sometimes that's easier said than done. And like I said, if you're in a busy company and you go to fires regularly and you find yourself being critical and judgmental of other crews on the city, I think you should ask yourself, if you flipped crews with that other crappy firehouse, you took my crew out at twos and stick them at 18s, you take 18th crew and put them at twos, is the firefighters are currently at twos, are they going to be as good as they are when they go to that slow house? Because I think sometimes guys don't realize how much professional growth they get based out of opportunity. I didn't like they necessarily sought it, and equally how much harder it is to be at that championship level when you're not playing in championship games regularly.
Absolutely.
So, that's kind of my take on that. And hopefully people understand that. I'm not at all criticizing. I think every single person that gets into this job should be selfless in their service. But it's easy to do that when it's convenient. Integrity is the same way. Most people say doing integrity is doing the right thing when nobody's watching, right? That's the common answer. I would amend that. It's doing the right thing when nobody's watching, irrespective of the person involved or the outcome. Me, you and me, we're getting along. I like you. Danny, oh yeah, man, they're screwing Danny over. I'm gonna absolutely step for him. But I'll throw one of my buddies from Olathe, Will, under the bus. I don't like Will. Will sucks. They're screwing Will over. Well, he's a douchebag anyway. Screw him. You don't have any integrity, right? It's easy for me to step up and stand behind you when it's popular. It's easy for me to step up and stand behind you when nobody's going to criticize me for it. But if I'm not willing to step up and stand behind you, even when you're not popular and when I'm going to face criticism, then I probably don't have near the integrity I think I have, right? And I only bring that point up when I talk to people because we tend to judge our leadership the exact same way, right? Oh, Chief gave Danny a pass because they're tight. When I got in a wreck, I got two shifts. Danny does freaking runs over a school bus full of nuns and he got a slap on the wrist because the chief likes Danny, right? But then I do the exact same shit in my firehouse. I'll cold shoulder this guy because I don't like him, but you and me are boys. Well, it's the same circus, man. Different clowns. And that's again one of those areas where it's very easy for us to throw stones at other parts of our organization and blame them for crap, not recognizing we ourselves perpetuate or do the exact same thing.
Fact.
So
That's
that, I mean,
fact.
it's that, to me, those are all tied together. It's a recognition of believing in an idealism and not realizing our own hypocrisy in that exact same idealism. And if you're somebody that truly believes these things about yourself, you won't know if it's actually true until you're challenged in it. And if, again, depending on your personality type, when you're challenged, it may be a lot harder to reconcile that. It was for me.
Yeah. No, love it. Love it. Okay. Wellness and truly being there for one another. The fire service, I saw a funny Instagram post the other day how it was about FDIC going on currently this week, and all you kept hearing was brother, 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 brother. And I was like, all right, that's pretty funny. But like when the fire service comes together, that's what we are. But man, we can eat each other. We can eat, our own real
Bad,
bad, real
bad.
bad.
Oh God, yeah. Nope. This one is, whoo. This is a big one, and your perception of this one is going to be varied based off your season of your career. But even, Even in, along, the instructional circuit, the firefighters, captains, whatever, the folks that we look up to as the leaders of the fire service, even amongst them, they can be just as catty as firefighters in a firehouse. All right. And if you've been around it, you know what I'm talking about. Those guys either tuning into this that are in the quote unquote circuit know exactly what I'm talking about. There's been times I've had to ask my friends, through some of the negativity and criticism, I don't even know who we like anymore. Like, who am I friends with anymore? Because I'll see these guys at conferences that we're teaching at whatever, and we'll get along and play nice, and oh yeah, brother. And then the next week we're throwing them under a bus about what a hack they are, right? And so no, this is truly one of the things that plagues the fire service. I don't care if you're talking about within your firehouse. I don't care if you're talking about within your fire department, your neighboring fire departments. For me, the foundational principle that I always have tried to become more aware of, as the for library would put it, the price of admission, is, like I mentioned earlier, do you enjoy crawling a hallway? I don't care if you're on search. I don't care if you're on a nozzle. I don't care. If you enjoy crawling a hallway, then that's the foundation of being a fireman, right? That we all share that commonality. And so I ride on a drive truck and do traditional truck work off that truck. Another firefighter may operate in a department where they run a Quint concept and they carry fog nozzles, right? And we can sit here and argue all day long about which one's better or worse. But at the end of the day, the core of what we do is a desire to serve and a love of crawling a hallway, right? When you lose sight of that, then you'll find yourself losing sight of all of it. Same thing with instructors in the industry. Okay. You pat Isaac on here. I'll pick on Isaac because Isaac is a, he's a, he's a fairly well-known individual, does a tremendous amount of training in the extrication field. Right. And you've said it yourself. Anybody that puts themselves out there and does stuff puts a target on their back. Right. And so I can sit here and pick apart Isaac and go, well, this. He doesn't, he's not even on the rescue anymore. He's a twos. He doesn't even ride rescue one in Wichita anymore. What does he know about cutting cars? Right? I could pick him apart all I want. But at the end of the day, and that's what a lot of firefighters do, right? You're getting a big name for yourself, right? You're moving in shaker, and I knew Danny back in the day, and man, he's really sold out now, right? Well, what am I basing that off of? We're all the same. We're all doing, all the instructors in this industry are doing the same stuff. And so at the end of the day, for me, where I have to reconcile that, because there are folks, I'm not going to lie, there are people out there that are very visible in this line of work. And I can't help at times to second guess or question, really? Is that guy the guy? With that said, I have to ask myself, one, is their message sound, right? Whether or not Isaac cuts 3,700 cars a year anymore, or he cuts three this year off truck two, is what he's teaching sound, right? Is he teaching good technique? Not only that, is he teaching a good mindset about his techniques? And again, I pick on him. This is anybody what this is in jest. Isaac, I have a tremendous amount of respect for him, and most people do in that discipline. But hypothetically, if he's teaching good stuff, right, and he's doing it in a way that is going to help firefighters improve, how many cars he cuts this year doesn't necessarily matter to me. You know what I mean? Or it shouldn't. And I say that because I'm from Wichita, Kansas, and I've taught all over this country. And if you don't know anything about Wichita, Kansas, what the hell do I know? And when I got into teaching, what the hell did I know? Because again, I knew a lot and had learned a lot about forced entry, I still work for a fire department that a lot of our companies carry three-piece Paratec Halligan bars. So if you judged me and my ability as an instructor based off of the organization I worked in and how much fire duty they went to, or your perception of it, you probably would think I was a hack, right? So I see this on all sides. I see this from the instructional side of things. I see it from the firehouse level. And at the end of the day, I think a lot of it boils down to professional jealousy, I think a lot of it boils down to ego, thinking that by God, the Pro Bar is the best Halligan bar in the world. And so, you like that council bar? Well, Danny's an idiot, right? I always joke about it when I'm teaching. I always start out with, I'm not here to build fences. And the way that I use the example is I'll say, what's your favorite college football team, Danny? Do you have one?
I don't. I'm more of an underdog type of person.
Okay. So throw out a college team. If you were going to support a college football program just because,
All
who
right.
is it?
Colorado Buffaloes, because I like Deion
Oh,
Sanders.
Colorado? So I was raised, my mom went to the University of Nebraska. My family is all from Nebraska. So I was raised a Cornhusker. So
Okay.
not only are you wrong, but you're a freaking moron and I can't stand you. This is the firehouse kitchen table, right?
Yep.
You hear about that fire threes went on last shift? I heard they did this, this, and this. What a bunch of morons, right? We all do this crap. Yet when we go to incidents, when we go to fires, we ask for grace. When, like I said, I grade myself on intent, grade you on your actions. Well, did you hear about truck two, man? They went to that fire last day. They couldn't even freaking get the door opened up. And I'm like, well, wait a minute, bro. There was a drop bar and we had another door. We tried to go through the lock, but they had a reinforcing plate over the cylinder. So I drove a screwdriver in and tried to turn it, but then the face broke off. Me, I'm grading off intent. You, I just go, well, you couldn't get in.
Right.
And I'm criticizing,
Right.
right? So one of my most favorite quotes is from Socrates that strong minds discuss ideas, moderate minds discuss events, and weak minds discuss people. And we want to talk about ways to force doors, we can. There's no reason to bring your name into it unless you are extremely good at it and I'm doing it out of praise. But if I'm bringing your name up for anything negative, what the hell? That's a weak mindset. A stronger mindset is talking about the concept and the way that we should do business. I don't need to bring you up into that to validate my point. In fact, that's the one thing I will say about fire service members. If you are getting instruction for somebody that feels a need to run down somebody else, I would really, really use some discernment with that. Because at the end of the day, when we eat each other and constantly run each other down, the thing is eventually I'm going to go, what the hell does Danny say about me when I'm not around? I mean, I heard him running down this guy. I heard him running down that guy. I understand. And even though I kind of agree with them, eventually they'll wake up one morning and realize you pretty much run down everybody we know except me. So what are you saying about me to these other people? Right? And I think that's one of the pitfalls. And like I said, I think sometimes it comes out of ego, it comes out of professional jealousy. Sometimes it comes as a challenge because, well, I heard so-and-so teaching this, Well, the other day I saw a video of some guys teaching hook and Halligan forcible entry. Like I invented it. I didn't. Everything I know was passed on to me from somebody else.
Right.
Right? And so, but somewhere along the way, we take ownership of the ideas. When we see others doing it, we criticize or challenge them. And in the firehouse, like I said, we'll sit there and critique other companies and pick them apart when they may have just been having a bad day. And let's not even get into the fact that, don't get me wrong, I think most people that are going to tune into this are passionate about what they do, right? They love this profession, whether they're paid or not, right? We still have wives or kids. Or family members. I got a mom with Alzheimer's that I take care of. I mean, we have other things in life. And the unfortunate reality about this, as much as we love this job, when I leave the nature of the job, if my name comes up at a kitchen table once every 6 months, I've had a profound impact two
Right.
weeks after I leave. It's just the nature of it. The job keeps pressing on. Anybody that's ever had an injury and been outside of the firehouse for more than a month knows what I'm talking about, man. The first week, guys are checking in on you. How's it going? Everything else. Week three, those assholes have a whole new text group without you in it. Because the job doesn't stop.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And this goes, and it's not the rabbit hole. Your retired members, and be intentional about bringing your members that left into the firehouse. Bring them home. Have them for breakfast. You talk to a lot of retired. Our guys, one, they all tell you they love the job. Most of them miss the guys. for us, regular guy breakfast is one of the things most commonly quoted as what they miss. But a lot of them recognize they no longer crawl those hallways. They're no longer a part of it. It didn't matter how many years they did it. They lose that feeling of being a part of it because later today, you and I are crawling the hallway. They're not going to crawl. So you can throw out some loose, oh, yeah, man, come by anytime. There's a good chance they won't because they no longer feel like it's their home. And I only say that because eventually all of us are going to be that guy
Right.
that leave the service and watch the job that we loved so much and poured so much into, and our family poured so much into, go on without us. And so, maybe if we're better about doing that sort of thing now and encouraging and finding grace and involving those that have gone before us in our organizations, it will also help us find grace with the members currently in the organization. And I think everybody in their career is going to wake up one day and realize they have more days in the rearview mirror than they do in the windshield. And that's a really interesting place to be when you hit that spot and you go, oh crap, man, I better start doing better at being grateful the days I have on the fire truck. It's amazing how many days you'll piss away bitching about the freaking crew at fives and what a crappy did the job they did on this fire, or damn A shift, I can't believe they left this bullshit for us again. Bro, that could be your last shift. You're gonna spend it being pissed off about something stupid? You get to ride in a big red fire truck, drive on the wrong side of the road. They let you break doors, go in to burning structures, put them out, cut holes in the roof, make grabs. What is there to be pissed off about? But it's amazing how much we do. And we pour toxicity into the culture of the organization by picking apart other members or picking apart other departments or picking apart other instructors or other podcast guys.
That's true facts right there. That's true
So,
facts. That's true facts. Okay. Last question for you. Where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it up?
I don't know. I really don't know. I when I was first got into the Wichita Fire Department, I had aspirations to someday be a firehouse captain. I've achieved that. I've never been the rank guy. I even though at that time, even as a young firefighter, I wanted to someday be a firehouse captain. It was again because as a volunteer, I got to that rank and had the opportunity to see the rewards of helping others get good at the job, right? That opportunity to be in a leadership position. And, I found that while I got a lot of joy out of being really good as a driver or a pump operator, there was even more joy for me watching you get really good at it because I worked with you, right? So, that's been my motivation through a lot of my career is more opportunities to be involved or opportunities to have impact. And I don't know that you can really quantify like what that means in the career moving forward. If I'm on our battalion chief's list, if I get made a battalion chief, that will have a new set of challenges. Actually, it will be most US, most of our BCs, and it's a huge sacrifice. You don't get the joy of doing the job that we do now. And you're even more removed from the membership because you're no longer, you may co-quarter in a firehouse, but you're still not assigned in that firehouse. You know what I mean? So I don't really even know. That's an extremely difficult question. At the end of the day, if I had to put myself in a 5-year goal where I wanted to be, is I would want to be in a place where whatever role or capacity I'm working in the organization, I have the respect of the members that I work with. I hopefully have the respect of other members in the organization, whatever it is I do, that if I'm operating in a way that people disagree with, they still feel like that I'm operating in a way that has some integrity behind it. I think that's, again, as you climb the ranks of the organization, your role in the organization and what you have to focus on doing changes. And so I'll pick on, we have a battalion chief in particular that a lot of guys criticize because they feel like he's a hypocrite. When he was a captain, he was pretty, he would jump a lot of alarms and that sort of thing. And now he's a battalion chief. He's pretty stickler on his company's not jumping calls. And a lot of guys criticize him for being a hypocrite. And what he doesn't get is the grace of, he understands his role is different. His job is different. When he was the captain, his job wasn't to make sure all the companies in this section of the city weren't jumping calls. His job was to be on a rig and go to calls. And he went to as many as he could. Now his job is different. It doesn't mean that he's a hypocrite. Doesn't mean that he compromised his integrity. It means he actually, in some ways, has integrity because he recognizes his responsibility in the organization has changed. And he has to be the guy that pulls on the reins now. And we talked about that a little bit earlier. If you're not ready to be the guy to pull on the reins, don't step into leadership because that's part of it. And so, you know, I would equally hope, with that said, I would hope as I, if I did move up in ranks, that I wouldn't be put in situations where I did things as a captain that were counter to what my role would be as a chief. I try to be, and always have tried to be, very respectful of what the leaders of the organization ask, especially like my battalion chiefs and my captains and lieutenants when I was a firefighter. I always try to be very respectful of their role because that's another thing that gets lost. A lot of times, younger members on the organization, firefighters, even, yeah, just firefighters, they don't understand the concept of the foundation of authority. And let me explain. If you're a senior firefighter in a firehouse and you expect the rookie to, you would you expect the rookie to listen to you if they gave them an order or asked them to do something as a senior man?
Would I expect a rookie to listen to me
Yeah.
if I hand them if I gave them a task?
Yeah. Like taking out the
Oh,
trash. Hey, Rook, I need you to take out the trash.
yeah, sure.
Okay, sure. So when the lieutenant tells you to do something, you better do it. The foundation of your authority as a senior man is the
Right.
same foundation the lieutenant's built on,
Right.
right?
Right.
So I can have my issues. And again, this is one of those areas I probably fail at more often than not. I can have my issues with some of the leadership in my organization, but I always have to respect and regard their foundation of authority because if I don't listen to my battalion chief, if I make it okay that the battalion chief doesn't want us, I don't know, smoking cigars in the apparatus bay, I'm like, ah, oh, chief's off today. We can do it. Well, why should my guys listen to me? You know what I mean? Because
Yeah.
the foundation of authority is the same. I build off the exact same foundation my battalion chief built off of, my lieutenants built off of. So if I'm dismissive with how important that foundation of authority is, I have no reason for my guys to listen to me. The same thing goes, and we already talked about how we eat each other. The same thing goes with how I speak of others. You know? My guys, I don't think they figured this out. We had a moment on the truck a few weeks ago. They did, where I had a tidbit of information that I shared with them, and it involved a member of the organization, but the member's identity didn't matter. But I was like, "Hey guys, I heard," and it was something. It wasn't like just rumor, rhetoric stuff. It was related. I don't remember exactly the example. Oh, I do remember. Okay, we'd recently done a search drill. There was some data information that came out of that. And there were some particular examples given of some companies that excelled and some companies that might not have excelled. So we're discussing the what this information that was given to me. And of course, when we were talking about the companies that didn't excel, the guys were like, "Well, who was it? Who did a really who missed two victims in that drill?" It's like, it doesn't matter. Like, oh, come on, Cap, who was it? Well, I'm not going to tell you. There's no offense. That information was given to me in confidence by somebody else. If I divulge that information to you, what makes you think that you can come to me in confidence when you're having marital problems and I'm going to keep it? The only way you could ever trust that is that you see me demonstrate that same principle elsewhere. And again, that goes back to it's easy when we're boys, but you know how the rumor mill grows on the fire service, and so much of it is because we're all boys. Well, there's degrees of separation to trust. You and I are tight, right? You can give me or tell me something in confidence, and that's cool. Well, me and Cole Perry, we're tight. He's my driver, right? So I'm gonna talk to Cole and just be like, "Hey, man, I heard this deal. You told me in confidence, so keep it quiet." Well, Cole may be beholden to me as far as trust goes, but he isn't necessarily beholden to you. So his reasoning of keeping that in confidence is lessened because he doesn't have that direct connection with you. So that again is ways that we kind of shoot ourselves in the foot, is not recognizing the foundation of authority we all operate on of anywhere in this organization. Even as a rookie, someday you're going to want to be a boss. And I call it lieutenant-itis. When I was a firefighter, I went through seasons of lieutenant-itis where I criticized my boss and did, what the hell were they doing? And they're dragging their feet on this, blah, blah, blah. And then I became a boss. And it's amazing how much shit you forget the second you're the one making decisions and how much different where I perceived, apathy and I perceived lack of aggressiveness. I now perceive a methodical thought. I now perceive of assessing, determining, and executing. And those things look differently depending on which seat of the fire truck you're riding, right? And so those are all things that as a younger firefighter appreciate. And foundation of authority is one of them. As a younger firefighter, if you're a rookie that likes to stir crap up and not show respect to your officers, and by God, I hope when you become an officer, that's exactly what you get working for you. It ain't going to change. You can't, now you don't have to be the exact same person you were yesterday, but just because you become a lieutenant, captain, or chief doesn't change who you were yesterday. And you're not going to suddenly wake up with bugles and be a better person if you've been an asshole the rest of your career. So that was, I didn't mean to rabbit hole you there, but
No, you're good.
at the end of the day, that's for me, I hope that what matters to me most is those principles that transcend all the ranks that wherever I'm serving in the organization, if I'm still blessed to be a firehouse captain and get to do what I do, hopefully I still emulate the same things, whether it's at Firehouse 2 that gets regular fire duty, or whether it's at Firehouse 18 where 75% of the runs are systems alarms. I hope the members out there would have the same opinion of me as the members where I'm at now. And hopefully wherever I am in my career, and again, June 18th of this summer is my minimum. And I'm one of those guys that I'm a pilot and I may want to do, I have no aspirations that when I retire, I'm just going to retire. I'm probably going to have another career. And so there is kind of a reconciling of, is it better to leave the fire service earlier and actually get to a decent sleeping schedule and start another career earlier so I have a better opportunity to draw two pensions? I don't have that answer, but it's a consideration. So I don't even know if I'll still be here in 5 years. I just hope
Right.
that wherever I am, that like I said, that I've carried myself in a way that the guys still respect me. And if I am in a higher rank, that it's the same thing that I hope for now, that even when the guys don't like what I have to say or don't agree with me or don't necessarily agree with my style, they recognize the fact that I'm doing what I feel is right. And I tend to try to do those things in the best interest. I tell all, when I got assigned to this firehouse, and I tell this everywhere I work, that as a firefighter, I care about you and my company more as an individual than I do as a firefighter. It sounds a little weird, but I care more about, if you're struggling at home, you're having financial problems, I care that your mental health is there. I care that you have the support structure you need. It doesn't have to be me, okay? But I care more about that than I do just you as another member on the roster, right? But when it comes to thinking about the firehouse, I care more about the firehouse than I do as you an individual. And that's a weird concept, but at the end of the day, it's an important one. Again, I'm here for them, but I'm only here for them if I get to work at twos. Sometimes my perspective about how I do my job becomes very, very self-serving and selfish. I was really fortunate to get assigned to a good firehouse out of recruit class. And well, now I've earned my spot. I deserve to be here. Do you? I mean, really? What if you hadn't got assigned to a good firehouse? Would you have made your way? The point being that I try to run the firehouse and what I think is the best interest of the firehouse. And it is nothing personal. I try to be very clear about expectations. If you don't like the expectations I have, okay, that's fine. Well, we can, I'll be open-minded. We'll discuss it. At the end of the day, you're still not meeting the expectations I want. I'm going to find you a firehouse that's going to make you happy. It's not personal. The choice is yours. You can choose to up your training game. You can choose to up your attitude. You can choose to put your own feelings aside and be here for them and sacrifice your personal feelings to fall into what the firehouse needs. Or you can choose to work in one of the other 21 firehouses we have. And you should be okay with that. Because when you become the captain, you're going to set the expectations off the same foundation authority I'm offering up today. And you're going to want people to either get on board or be willing to get out. But anytime you have a member that doesn't want to do either one of those things, they become a cancer in the firehouse. And everybody knows what the cure for cancer is. There's two options. It either gets cut out and taken care of, or it results in death. And the firehouse is the same way. So,
That's it. Yes.
you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, that's the encouragement to the brothers out there that are in shitty situations, working for bosses they don't like, or having personality conflicts in the house. Just, I encourage you to remember why you got into this. And if you're one of those people that feel like you're here for them, that means even when it's not convenient or it's not fun. But a lot of times, just that personal shift in perspective, just like at 18, I walked into a station, and when I transferred, I walked out of a firehouse. Only thing different is the attitude and perception and how the guys chose to address the way it was going to be every day they walked into work. So.
Love it, love it. Kat, I really appreciate you coming on, accepting the invite. I can't
I
wait to
appreciate
see
the
you.
opportunity. Yeah, I'm
Can't,
looking forward to
I
it, man.
can't wait to see and hear your presentation in person in November. Thank you for taking time out of your day, dropping knowledge, speaking the truth, even if some don't want to hear it. Sometimes things need to be said, and I have thoroughly enjoyed this conversation, and I'm sure the members will. Or the listeners will also, but thank you, and don't ever change.
No, I appreciate the opportunity, brother. I really do. Thank you so much.
Yes, sir. You have a great day.
You too.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.